We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Abner Meyers is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, a dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Meyers, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him into the boxer and the man he is today. On the podcast, they're going to talk about topics like sports, music, and culture, being a husband and a girl dad, Abner's American dream, and his journey from a kid on the streets to a boxing champion. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Meyers wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes are out in English on Tuesdays, and episodes in Spanish are out on Wednesdays. It's the newest podcast from Blue Wire. Go check that out.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway, lays it in. Zach LaVine does it again.
A late shot on the back.
Oh, the finisher, Larry Markkanen.
The crossover, LaVine.
Get it up or get out the way, Trae Young.
What's going on, everyone? This is Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here, as always, with Jason Pat. Jason, we have no real news to talk about with the Bulls, but we do have the NBA draft inching closer, only about a month out right now. It's been a minute since me and you have talked about the draft, so I think we're going to get into some draft discussion today.
Yeah, let's do it. The draft, again, is scheduled for November 18th, and if you somehow forgot, the Bulls currently have the number 4 pick. Whether they actually make the number 4 pick, we'll see, but we will talk about that kind of stuff and some of the rumors that are out there. We'll talk some mock drafts. So I guess to start, let's just kind of, Ricky, as the resident draft expert here, over these last couple months, since we've talked, you mentioned we haven't talked draft in a while, what is your kind of gut feeling about where the Bulls are going to go? Anything you've heard, anything you've done in your scouting that you've seen, any players that you like have really just like popped out to you, anybody you definitely like don't want them to take? I know you don't like James Wiseman. I know you mocked Killian Hayes in your first mock draft that you did. So just your general kind of draft thoughts for the Bulls, what you kind of gather over the last month or two.
I think the most exciting thing for Bulls fans going into this is that it's a totally new process, and not only are the Bulls going to get a really exciting new young player with wherever they pick, if it's number 4, if it's sooner, if it's later, the Bulls are going to get a blue chip prospect in this draft to build around for the future. And we're also going to get another data point on what Arturis Karnišević is like, because up to this point, all we really have is the Billy Donovan hire to go off of, right? Like, there's not too much information on him. You can look back at what the Nuggets have done the last few years, but he certainly was not the lead voice for that team. So he was, you know, part of a collective that helped build the Nuggets into a Western Conference finalist this year. So I think that we still don't know a ton about AK, and this draft pick will give us some insight into what his thought process is like and how he's going to help rebuild the Bulls. So in terms of like, if I heard anything, if I, discovered anything new, well, I'll say that this draft cycle is the longest running draft cycle ever because of the pandemic and because, you know, the bubble and the draft got pushed back a couple months. And so, no, I feel like my scouting on this draft has been done for a long time. I need to constantly remind myself of the stats and some of the narratives. But I haven't really thought anything new from the day the Bulls got the fourth pick. I wanted them to take Killian Hayes with that number four pick. And I thought that most likely their pick would come down between Denny Avdija or Obi Toppin. And I still kind of feel that way. It'll be Denny or Obi. I have no new insight into this whatsoever. So that's just pure speculation. Don't take it as even informed speculation. And from what we're reading in this run-up to the draft, Jason, it seems like everyone is pretty much in the same boat. Everyone's like, Well, we don't know what AK and Eversley are going to do, but I guess we'll find out soon. So I think we're all sort of flying in the dark on this, and that's part of what makes it so exciting.
Right. You mentioned how we really don't know like how AK is going to operate. Sam Vecenie at The Athletic in his most recent mock draft basically reported just that. Like everybody around the league isn't really sure like what he's going to do with this core. Is he going to keep them together? Is he going to try to break things up already? Or is he trying to make a move? Like we just don't really know. And like even like looking at, like you mentioned Denny and Obi Toppin, you look at Sam's mock draft, he has the Bulls taking Denny. I believe it was Jeremy Wood, SI, also has the Bulls taking Denny. And they both basically gave like the same, well, you know, like AK's got the international experience. So like they're just going to assume that they're going to take the international guy. Obviously, Killian Hayes would kind of fall into that as well. But I mean, both of them just kind of looking at it that way, which I think like for what we do know, again, we don't know much, like that does make sense. Like the Bulls could use a versatile forward playmaker type. And obviously we have talked a bit about Denny, and while he might not have like the highest ceiling in the world, like he's no Luka Doncic, like anyone trying to make those comparisons is crazy. But like it seems like he'd be the type of player AK would take, like ball movement, versatile forward type. Like it seems like it would make sense. But yeah, I mean, so I did a thing over at Bloggable, just kind of recapping some of these mock drafts that we've seen. I mentioned The Athletic and Sports Illustrated both had Denny. The Ringer has Killian Hayes going to the Bulls, and that's Kevin O'Connor, who does great draft coverage over at The Ringer. He actually has Killian Hayes as his number one prospect in this draft, which I think I don't know if you think he's number one, but clearly very, very high on him. You guys both are high on him. And then there's been some Obi Toppin love out there as well. I know Darnell Mayberry, who we just recently had on over The Athletic, wrote a piece kind of looking at the best fits for the Bulls, and he was really feeling Obi Toppin. Jonathan Wasserman at Bleacher Report. Apparently, people really love Obi Toppin around the NBA in this draft. Like they think his flaws are like overhyped. They like just he's a great offensive player. He'll come in and get buckets. He put in his piece that he did today, he wrote about how Obi Toppin could be the Timberwolves really like him, like whether they actually like him at number one or whether they would want to get him to trade down. I mean, that still seems like he could go maybe as high. I don't know. I don't want to say he'll go number one, but like he could go super high. Like he could be in a position where the Bulls could take him as well if he doesn't go in the top three. So it just kind of is all over the place. Like there's in this draft where there's really no consensus number one guy. It will be very interesting to see just like how things shake out and like just where the Bulls and just what position they'll be in.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I just read that article from John Wasserman on Obi Toppin. And I kind of have a theory on this is like why NBA executives would love Obi Toppin. While I think, you know, a lot of people who are sort of armchair scouts look at Obi Toppin as someone who's like a super flawed player who, you know, might have to be taken off the court in the highest leverage situations. Because that's the thing with Obi Toppin. It's like he was a remarkably efficient and dominant offensive player in college basketball. He was a pretty bad defensive player. He sort of doesn't have a spot defensively in the NBA. He's stuck between a four and a five. And he's also old. He's 22 years old. He is one day younger than Jason Tatum, which I just tweeted out before we started recording this podcast. So that gives you some context in terms of, you know, yeah, he was dominant, no doubt, but in a sense, like in a draft where you have so many super young players, he's like, you know, 3-4 years older than some [S2] Right. [S1] Of these guys. So, but my theory on this is just like Toppin isn't a guy who's going to get you fired as an executive, right? So I think that's why executives might like him. You can swing for the fences with someone like, let's say, Isaac Okoro, who might have like a little bit more probability to one day become an NBA star. If he could, you know, improve his game in certain areas for Okoro at shooting, because he just has like the body and the fit and a lot of things that you look for in, you know, a top-level NBA prospect. Toppin is certainly, I think, more flawed in ways. And obviously, he's older, and that should affect, you know, his evaluation and just like the overall developmental curve that NBA teams are projecting for him. But he's a safe bet to put up numbers. He's a safe bet to not make you look like a huge idiot for going against the grain. Toppin is a projected, probably top five pick at this point. Top six pick would be his projection. And I think if you were to take him in the top six, even if he's the type of guy who needs to be pulled off the floor if you're in the conference finals or something, first of all, like, a team drafting him in the top five has so far to go before they get to the conference finals. If the Bulls or the Cavs are taking Obi Toppin, you know, it's worth even it's a debate whether or not they should even be factoring in how this guy could help them if they were in the championship series, right? Like, that is just so far in front of these teams that would be taking Toppin, besides for maybe the Warriors, obviously, who have Steph and Klay coming back next year. And then, like, what you get in Toppin, even if it is a guy who kind of sucks on defense, if he's averaging 20 a game and he's putting up cool dunks and hitting some threes and is just like an efficient offensive player like we expect him to be, then I think that, like, there's not going to be any pressure from ownership, right? You can always say, well, Obi's averaging 19-7, so don't blame me. Like, I don't know why they can't win. I guess we got to fire the coach, right? Something along those lines. In similar thing, I think, with James Wiseman as well, where Wiseman, I think, has a high enough floor, even though, like, I don't think Wiseman has the ceiling to be a top five pick. That's why I would not take him in the top five. But I think his floor is high enough where you probably won't look really stupid and get fired if you take James Wiseman in the top five. Probably not. Like, he'll likely average 15-12 and be one of the league leaders in shot blockers one day. And even if he's exactly like Hassan Whiteside and you took Hassan Whiteside in the top five, I think, like, really, like, attuned NBA fans like us and hopefully the people who listen to this show would consider that to be a bad pick if you're getting Hassan Whiteside in the top five, because he's a guy who might put up numbers, but his impact isn't as significant as those numbers.
It's also just
kind of
goofy.
Yeah. But, you know, there's like a baseline there where, like, Wiseman and Toppin, they are projected as top five picks. So you're not going to have to go against the grain to take them in that slot. And more likely than not, they're going to put up, you know, box score numbers that will not make them a bust. So I think that, you know, that's why teams are higher on them than, like, armchair draft experts are. And yeah, then you read that, like, the Timberwolves are high on top and they're considering taking top at number one. I'm like, sheesh, could you imagine a Carl Towns top in front court? That would be one of the worst defensive front courts I could think of.
Buckets, like, baby.
That would
buckets
just be free lanes to the basket for the opposition all game long. They'd be insane on offense, no doubt, especially with Towns' shooting ability and Toppin being able to score in the paint. It would be a great match on offense and a horrible match on defense, especially with D'Angelo Russell on the perimeter there. They would really need some a strong perimeter defense to even have a chance with those two guys in the front court. But that's just kind of my take on it and why I think Toppin is rising for executives while armchair draft guys are a little cooler on him.
Yeah, and then, I mean, obviously we do have to consider smoke screens before the draft. Like, who knows, like, how much what actually out there is true, what, like, teams are always putting information out there for a reason. You always have to consider that. Like, so who knows about that kind of stuff? I guess looking still at Denny and Obi, if you mentioned those two guys, you'd like Killian Hayes and the Bulls at four. But if it was between Denny and Obi, who would you prefer, I guess, and why?
Man, that's a really tough question. I could go either way on this. I haven't been a super big Denny guy. I'm really torn on this. I'm like talking it out right now in my head. It's like, well, for Denny, I think he has more versatility and he has a higher potential to, like, be on the floor in those crucial playoff moments. I think that you can think of him as just like a solid, competent starter, even though I don't think that he has all-star upside. And to me, like, if you're taking a top five pick, why wouldn't you take a swing at a guy with all-star upside?
Right.
And then you have Toppin, who is really good on offense. I think that Toppin's offense in the league is going to be awesome. I think if you put Toppin on a team like the Warriors, Warriors have the second pick. I'm not sure what they will do with that pick. You know, there's been so many leaks coming out of the Warriors
yes,
with what they're going to do in the run-up to the draft. It's like basically hilarious. But I think Toppin would kill in that system, for example, just because they have so much perimeter shooting.
Well, it's kind of funny. We've heard, I think, some of the leaks that we've heard is that they would like Denny, that they want a wing, that they would take Denny. I think that's where KOC had, I think he has Denny going to the Warriors in his mock, and that's some of the other like rumors that we've heard, just kind of interesting. Continue.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't know, man. I feel like I would give you a different answer every day on whether or not I want Denny or Obi. Today I'm going to say Obi, and I might be totally wrong on this, but I think his offense could be really, really good. I'm not sure what you do with him defensively because he's pretty brutal, but you know, you try to insulate him with four other good defensive players and you let his offense shine. So I don't know. I'm regretting this as I'm saying it already.
I guess just looking at it in a fit with the Bulls, like if you're taking just another like offensive stud type, except they need offense. They had a terrible offense, but then you like look at on the Bulls, it's like, well, Zach LaVine and Kobe White are like offensive first gunners. Lowry, obviously, I think if you take Obi, you'd probably maybe move Lowry sometime very soon, if not like right away, I would think. But like, so it's like, except they need offense. The Bulls need talent. So it's like, do you take this? Like, does Obi, would you say Obi has definitely like the higher ceiling than Denny?
It's tough to say. Like, my take on, like, I think Denny is a little overvalued in this draft because I don't really think he has a standout skill. And I think, like, in the half court, there's some major questions about his game. Like, if you're not the offensive initiator these days, you kind of got to space the floor. And I think his shooting is questionable. Now, his shooting touch has looked better in, you know, when his league picked back up after they stopped for the pandemic. You're seeing a lot of videos floating around now of like Denny's jumper in an open gym. It looks better. That can be contrasted against like Devin Vassell's jumper.
I was going to bring that up really, later, but the perfect timing.
Really bad now. Like, he reworked his jumper and now that's super scary. And you know, that's something you're going to have to track as draft gets closer, as his career, you know, begins in the NBA. So you don't want to overreact to like three shots that you see on Twitter with Devin Vassell in terms of his new jump shooting form.
But looked like shit though.
It looked weird. Yeah. It was like giving you some major Mikal Bridges flashbacks where Bridges sort of changed his jumper from Villanova to his early days on the Suns. And then Bridges cleaned it up this year, cleaned up the form, and Bridges was awesome in the bubble. He looks like he's going to be a really effective player for them long term. And yeah, like Denny's release does look better now in an empty gym. So it'll be interesting. I think that, I think Obi probably has the higher ceiling, but it can be debated either way. They both have, to me, Obi has a very clear flaws defensively, and it's going to be more about the supporting cast around him to see if he can unlock all his tools.
Makes sense. Before we continue, take a quick break for a word from our partners, Indeed and BetOnline. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. And Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. So right now, Indeed is offering cash considerations listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts. That means more quality candidates will see it fast. So try Indeed out with that free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. So go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. This offer is valid through December 31st. The wait is finally over and football's back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. So head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use that promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. We are back. Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We are talking about the draft, which is about a month away here, November 18th. You mentioned the war. We talked about the Warriors a bit. There was an interesting, I don't want to call it necessarily a trade rumor, more like just trade kind of speculation. This was coming from NBC Sports' Tom Haberstroh was on Bulls podcast with Casey Johnson, kind of speculating. Again, we really don't know what this front office wants to do. But he was kind of speculating that he thinks that the Bulls might want to move up because the Timberwolves might want to trade down. You mentioned the Warriors have so many leaks, so many rumors about them possibly trading out, maybe getting somebody more ready to play. And he says he wouldn't be surprised if you see Chicago move up in the draft. I feel like we kind of talked about possible like trades up to number two, like a win now piece. Like, what do you even see like any trade? Like, who would the Warriors want from the Bulls? Like, would they try to trade for, I mean, Zach? Probably not, which I will get into something. There was an interesting trade scenario, a trade proposal I saw out there. I think it was from the Locked On Bulls guys. But, like, would they, like, Lowry or, like, I guess Otto Porter would probably fit in pretty nicely. But, like do you see the Bulls? Like what kind of deal could you see the Bulls and the Warriors possibly working out to get them up to number two?
So, this is a good moment to plug Stefan Noh's newsletter on Substack. Stefan is blogging on Substack now. Make sure you subscribe to that. You can tip him there too. Make sure you do that as well. He wrote a good article today on how the Bulls should approach trade options coming into this draft. And Stefan's takeaway is that there were sort of two types of executives. There's the executive that knows what they want to do coming into the draft, and they're going to be hellbent on accomplishing it either way. And then there's the executive that is flexible and takes the more advantageous path that, the circumstances allow. So reading that, all I could think about is Bears GM Ryan Pace, who I think is, you know, very much like when the Bears were trying to get Mitch Trubisky, he was dead set on coming out of that draft with Mitch Trubisky, whatever it took. You can say the same thing about the Bulls when they traded up for Doug McDermott. I'm sure that the Bulls had no other backup plan and did not care what it cost. They just wanted Doug McDermott. As Stefan mentions in his story, same thing with the Jimmy Butler trade. The Bulls were hell-bent on trading Jimmy Butler, and as soon as they got the first acceptable package, they pulled the trigger on it. So Stefan's story says that he thinks that Karnišovas and Eversley are going to be more flexible based on their previous history, which would be great, right? So, like, yeah. If the Bulls could trade up to number two, if it's a year where, like, let's be honest, the top talent isn't very good this year. It's the one thing everyone knows about this draft class. We know that everyone wants to trade down, right? You could say that about every single team at the top of the draft. Trade down should be their number one option. Well, if everyone wants to trade down, maybe it doesn't cost you so much to trade up. And going from two to four, I think, puts the Bulls in a really premium position to possibly make a move without giving up too much. And Stefan argues that, you know, you could offer the Warriors a second round pick in their choice of Satoransky or Thad Young to move from four to two. Now, that's not a ton, obviously. I think I mentioned the same thing right after the lottery was over, that the Bulls should reach out because the Warriors are going to try to win a title next year. They need depth. The end of the Warriors roster, even the middle of the Warriors roster, is pretty bad. I think the Warriors would love to get Otto Porter, and then the Bulls would have to take Wiggins, who still has 3 years left on his deal. If I'm the Bulls, I want no part of Andrew Wiggins for 3 years. But the question is, like, he is so young. Could you possibly, like, take him and then flip him again if you're trying to think two steps ahead? So I do think it would be good for the Bulls, potentially, if it's not going to cost you too much, to go out and get the second pick if you can land LaMelo Ball. I think LaMelo Ball is the best prospect in the draft. He's the one player I would have over Killian. But I would not trade Lauri Markkanen to do that, right? Like, I want another year of Markkanen under someone who's not the worst head coach in the league so we can properly evaluate him. Obviously, Markkanen had a really disappointing year last year, but there are a lot of built-in excuses, especially with all the instability he's had at head coach. And I think that, like, it would not be worth giving up Markkanen to move up two spots. But if it's all it's going to cost you is Satoransky or Thad, then to me that's a no-brainer. Now, you know, if you have someone like Wiseman, let's say, slip to four, and some team really likes Wiseman, I think that it would be smart for the Bulls to trade back if they could, you know, accumulate assets. And as long as they're not slipping too far, I guess. Like, there's not too many logical trade partners. I guess the Knicks have 8 and 27. The Celtics have 3 first-round picks, but it's 26, 30, and I think 14. So it is going to be tough to find trade partners for every team in the league. Same for the Bulls. But I really like Stefan's bit about being flexible in the draft and not going in with a dead set plan, because we've really seen that come to bite Chicago teams in the ass more often than not over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, you want to be able to make decisions on the fly. And if you need to change something, I mean, you definitely, being rigid is usually just never a good way to go, especially in a situation like this. Like, you want to be able to just be able to switch if something happens, like a trade in front of you happens or something like that, to make a move. You should be able to do it. Have you seen this trade? I know this. Somebody tweeted at us, and somebody had showed this to me a couple days ago. This trade that's been, I think, this proposed, whatever. Like I said, I think it came from the Locked On Bulls guys. 3-way deal with the Bulls, Warriors, and Nets. This trade would have Zach LaVine going to the Nets, because the Nets want a third star to pair with KD and Kyrie. The Bulls would then get Caris LeVert, the number 2 pick, and 19. And then the Warriors would get Jared Allen, so they'd get a big man, and then they'd move back to number 4. Who says no in that trade? And would you do it yourself if you, for the Bulls? Who would say no? I think for me, I guess personally for me, I probably would do it for the Bulls. And I think probably the Nets would need a little more there. I don't think like giving up Allen, LeVert, and 19 is worth Zach LaVine. I don't think. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm going to need you to paste that trade into GChat or something for me right now so I can look at it and properly answer that question. But it would be tough to trade Zach if you're keeping 4. Wait, no. So I guess the
you
Warriors
move up
are
to
getting
2.
4.
You move up to 2.
So we're trading Zach LaVine to move up from 4 to 2.
And you're getting Caris LeVert and then another first rounder, 19.
And then the 19th pick. That's really interesting. I don't know. I guess my first reaction is I probably wouldn't do that. But it's interesting. It's definitely one that you would really have to think on and sort of analyze from multiple perspectives. It's a great hypothetical trade. So kudos to whoever came up with that. But I think that, yeah, who would say no to that? So the Bulls are getting 2-19. Man.
And Caris. A lot of it depends on what you think of Caris LeVert. I think he's on a pretty affordable deal. He obviously played really well, had some big games in the bubble without Kyrie and KD. Maybe the Nets think he can actually be their third star. I'm assuming they will go for somebody a little more proven. I know he's had injury problems. I think he's been kind of overhyped since he came out of Michigan, but he is very talented. Again, he had some huge games. So a lot of it probably depends on what you think of him. Because then, I guess say you come out of this, whatever, with Caris LeVert, LaMelo Ball, and then whoever somebody at 19. But you're only giving up Zach LaVine, and then obviously you're number 4 as well. But if you come out of it this draft with Caris LeVert, LaMelo Ball, and then the number 19 pick, and you're losing Zach LaVine.
Yeah, I guess maybe you do it, because I do think that LaVine is better than LeVert by a pretty significant margin. I kind of think LeVert's pretty overrated, even though I've been a big fan of LeVert actually since he was in college. He was one of my guys in that draft back in the day, but LeVert is kind of an offensive only player, and I don't know if he makes teammates better by passing the ball. The question is, who could you get at 19, right? And just looking at Tankathon right now, there would be I don't know if the board's actually going to break this way, but Kira Lewis at 19, they have Tyrese Maxey at 18, they have Pukaševski at 17. So potentially you could get someone pretty good at 19. I do think that would be a major asset for the Bulls. And I also the question is will Zach LaVine, who has 2 years left on his deal, is he going to sign another deal with the Bulls? And then, what sort of role is he going to be in on the next good Bulls team? My guess is that the Bulls probably won't have Zach LaVine featured as a featured piece the next time they're really good. But I don't know. Like, we can.
I mean, a lot could depend on what happens this year. Like, if they're bad again, like, if next year does not go well, like, I mean, don't you got to think he's probably got to ask out, right? I mean, I guess depending on how much they'd be willing to pay him. But if it's like the Bulls are not good again next year, like, I don't see why the Bulls would extend big money to a guy who's, even though he's good, and we've, I think, come around on him a bit, like, you're going to give Zach LaVine some massive extension if you're like, if you've been bad every single year he's been there? And, like, is he going to want to stay in Chicago and keep playing for a team that sucks? Like, I think, obviously, I think the future is a bit more promising with this front office and with Billy Donovan, but you have to wonder what he's thinking about it as he gets closer.
I think that, like, what he's going to want is the money. And yeah. I don't think that, like, I believe that Zach might have a little bit of Lillard in him, where he might rather, like, be the guy on his own team and try to win than, like, so if he goes and changes teams, and then he's going to have to find a team who's willing to give him $30 million or whatever, $25 million a year, he's definitely going to get a raise, you would think, right? So,
sure.
Like, Levine's been pretty good on this contract. I believe he's, like, the 60th highest paid player in the league, right?
Yeah, and something like that. $19 million a year. It's very – for the production he's giving you, it's pretty solid.
It's fine. Totally fine. It's not a drastic overpay by any means. You can probably argue it's an underpay. I would say it's about a fair contract for Zach LaVine. But what's his next contract going to be?
Right. I mean, he'll be probably looking for like a near max deal. And just, I mean, are you willing to pay that for a guy who has never won? And I don't want to put it all on him. Obviously, his circumstances have not been good on a rebuilding Timberwolves team with a lot of young talent, just super raw. And then now with the Bulls coming off a torn ACL, like, and his teammates around him bad, but I mean, he's never really lifted. I mean, he's not a guy that has lifted like teams. Like, he has his big scoring games, but like, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum, like, in terms of being the number one initiator who can lift your team to be way better offensively. And then obviously he has the defensive problems. So, like, are you paying that kind of guy $30 million?
I would also be really disappointed if the Bulls did that trade and then LaMelo went number one.
Yeah.
So now you're like sitting there with the second pick. And
Anthony Edwards.
Like, I would take Killian too.
Yeah.
But Killian and Anthony Edwards, they're like pretty similar in terms of where I would have them on my board. In terms of their playing style, they're not really similar at all, even though they're like pretty much the same size. They're both guards, but they have totally different games. Edwards is like a hyper explosive athlete, 10 out of 10 NBA athlete who could be like a awesome NBA scorer, but he has real questions in terms of his feel for the game that shows up on both ends of the floor. Defensively, I think like Edwards defensively is going to be at a steep learning curve in the NBA. Like, people talk about LaMelo's defensive question marks more, I feel like, but I think LaMelo's going to be a better defensive player early in his career than Anthony Edwards is going to be. I think Edwards is going to be like pretty brutal on that end, whereas Hayes, we've talked about him a bunch, but he projects as like a really good, I think, defensive player, super smart help defender, who might not have like the takeover one-on-one scoring ability, but I think still projects as a plus offensive player for a variety of reasons. So it would be tough to do that deal and then see LaMelo go. If I'm trading up, LaMelo is the guy I'm targeting all day. And I don't think that LaMelo is like a surefire bet to be a great player. He certainly has a ton of risk. He has more risk than your typical player who's going to go one or two, I think. But I also think he has the highest talent, the most talent in the draft, the highest ceiling. And if he reaches his potential, should be the best player in this draft class. You know, assuming, you know, the he can work on some of his flaws and actually hit what we believe his potential to be. So, I don't know. Those are all good questions.
Yeah. Last draft here, or thing here before we kind of wrap up this pod, from the same guy who brought us this, this trade idea. This is, give a shout out to at Bulls Wisco, Bulls fan Wisco on Twitter. He had a question about Tyrese Halliburton, and we did talk about him a bit when we had Brian Schroeder at Cosmos on. I thought I saw something. Did he have a weird shooting video coming out? I know his shots is kind of funky in general, right? Was there something with him out there too? Like,
what player? What player is this?
Halliburton.
Oh, Halliburton. Yeah, so like Halliburton, yeah, there was a empty gym video of Halliburton too.
Okay.
Halliburton's a guy who just like didn't take a lot of shots off the dribble or like any mid-range shots in college. He was pretty much a catch and shoot threes guy. Also didn't do a ton in terms of like attacking the basket. That's one of his big flaws. I know there has been, you know, people have been asking us what we think of Halliburton on the Bulls. I would not take him in number four, no way. Like, I think that he could be a good player in the right system, but to me, like, he has a total inability to put pressure on the opposing defense because he's not one of these guys that's going to, like, break down the defense off the dribble, get to the rim, and then, you know, when the defense collapses on him, uses vision to kick out. Like, if you don't have the ability to put pressure on the rim, which I really don't think Halliburton has, that sort of limits your passing ability, right? So I do think that, like, while he is he's a good stationary player, he's a good stationary passer, stationary shooter, but in terms of being, like, worthy of the number four pick, I don't really see it for him. I would take a bunch of guys over him.
So I guess if say the Bulls did trade back to whatever, 7, 8, just mid-lottery, would you take him there, or would you still...
I mean, there would still be other guys I would want. I would still take Tyrese Maxey over him. I would still take, you know, I would probably even talk myself into Patrick Williams over him from Florida State, the combo forward. Like, there's just a lot of guys in that range. Kira Lewis is another one. You'd have to figure out what you're going to do with Kobe, but...
I mean, Vassell as well.
Vassell, for sure. In that area. Yeah, I wouldn't take Halliburton. He's not one of my guys in this draft.
Fair enough. Do you have any leftover draft thoughts here before we wrap up? I wanted to wrap up real quick, though, with some Bears stuff, but any last draft thoughts here?
It's going to be really interesting to see what the Intel guys are saying over the next couple weeks, because to this point, like, we still have no idea what the Wolves are going to do, right? Like, we have no clue.
Right.
And then
there's been a lot of smoke coming out about them wanting to trade for, like, a proven star. Maybe the Bulls could go trade them, Zach. I don't know what they...
There you go.
The Bulls can go trade out the number one. Zach LaVine returns to the Timberwolves.
That'd be funny.
Get Jared Culver, your guy. Number one and Jared Culver for Zach LaVine.
For foreign Zach? Yeah. I mean, I'd be down with that, probably. And then you got the Warriors, who... Everything is leaking from the Warriors, but there's been so many leaks that it's, like, to the point of farce at this point, and we just have no idea what they're going to do. And then you got MJ picking number three for Charlotte, and that's always a wild card. Like, I could see them taking probably whoever of the top three prospects, and we're putting Wiseman in there, falls to them, and then the ball. So I feel like... Because the season just ended, there still hasn't been a ton of information, a ton of buzz around this draft. And I'm really interested to see what happens the next few weeks in terms of just the intel that we start to get.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will continue to talk about that over these next few weeks. As I mentioned, as I teased, let's wrap up here with some quick thoughts about your 5-1 Chicago Bears. How they're 5-1, it's still kind of crazy. What is your, like, confidence level in this team? Like, do you think they're actually good? They have some really tough games coming up, but they just beat the Panthers, a pretty solid Panthers team in Carolina yesterday. Their defense is one of the best in the league, you could argue. I think it was, I don't know if it was Adam Johns or Adam Hogue, one of those Adams in the Chicago media called them the best defense in the league. What is your confidence level in this goofy-ass Bears team?
Not high. With that, there's still a decent chance they miss the playoffs, even though they're 5-1. Their schedule coming up,
it's brutal. It's
going to be pretty tough, and I think this Rams game is going to be a big win, or a big game for them to try to get a win that, you know, could possibly set the course for the rest of the season, but I don't have much trust in the Bears. What kills me is that I think they're poorly coached. Nagy has to have the lowest approval rating of any 5-1 coach that I can remember. There's just so many stupid play calling errors. They had 12 men on the field twice. They got a delayed game out of a timeout in the first quarter, I think.
Yep.
So I have no faith in Nagy to be a high-level head coach. And, you know, you look at how Mike Vrabel sort of outsmarted the Texans on Sunday to keep the Titans undefeated. Like, I just don't think that the Bears have that kind of leadership with Nagy.
I feel like with him, he seems like a coach who's, like, great at, like, motivating and, like, keeping them together and, like, having a good locker room and, like, maybe, like, preparation. It just seems like he melts down during games and just, like, totally loses it and gets too cute with this. You mentioned the play calling, like, that was in the fourth quarter. It's 3rd and 2. You're trying to run the clock out. I think the Panthers had one timeout left, and they throw a pass. And I know the run game sucks, and that's, like, a huge story with the Bears, but, like, everyone was just like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing that stuff? And you mentioned the other sloppiness. Like, he just seems like the game day aspect of his coaching is just very lacking.
Yeah. And so that's tough. And then, like, the offense is still so bad. Like, even with Foles in there, the Bears are still getting like 5 yards per passing attempt or something. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it's just always pathetic. They cannot move the ball through the air whatsoever. I do have more faith in Foles than Mitch, but you know, you're also losing the scrambling aspect with Foles in there. Like, at least Mitch could make a play on the ground. Now, Mitch was like too scared to run in his second season. Mitch did have some big runs this year before he got pulled. But I kind of think that handicaps the offense too. Like, at least have a scrambling quarterback in there who could do something. Foles can't really do that, but I still think that Foles was the right decision for the team because it just feels like you're not waiting for the guillotine to drop with Foles, right? Where with Mitch, you're always like, okay, when's the backbreaking mistake going to come? And Foles didn't throw a terrible interception.
The interception yesterday is one of the worst you'll ever see. Like, just, what was it, like a back foot, just like, throw up prayer, like, and that was right after the Bears had forced a turnover, and it was just like, what are you doing, man? Like, that was one of the worst throws I've ever seen.
Yeah, so I don't have much faith in the Bears.
Yeah,
but I mean,
I think with Foles, like, it clearly in terms of like his like veteran leadership and like his smarts running the team, and I know we made that big mistake, but I think just like seeing stuff and like recognizing stuff for the most part. I think was it the Buccaneers game when like the route he checked to Dave Montgomery on that wheel route just kind of shows like Foles like recognizing stuff like that. And just like, in terms of his leadership, like he gave like a huge passionate speech after the game yesterday, just like really fired up. And I think that kind of stuff is clearly like where you see like Foles having the edge, because Mitch is just like so often just like a deer in headlights. His recognition of defenses sucks. And while like talent wise, he's definitely obviously higher, like the upside is higher. At some point, you just can't wait on that. Especially when you have a Super Bowl caliber defense. So ultimately, you're probably right. Like, I mean, they are 5-1. They're stacking wins. But again, yeah, they play the Rams coming up. I think they play the Titans and Saints after that, something like that. Like, I was looking at the schedule, like, I'm hoping that they can get to 10-6, go 5-5 the rest of the year, like split your games against the Packers, win at least one against Minnesota.
Got to win two against Minnesota.
I mean, I know Minnesota's horrible, but I still like those division games. Like, I could see them easily losing one, but just like just split those Minnesota Packers games at the very least. You beat the Lions again and think maybe win one of these next three games, and then I think that gets you to 10. So you like bank these wins. If you get in the playoffs, like anything could happen. I'm assuming if they do get in the playoffs, the offense being shit will completely doom them again. Which I mean, we're so used to it at this point. Like a championship caliber Bears defense not being able to win a Super Bowl because the offense is terrible. I mean, we've lived through that our whole life. We're just seeing it again. I'm not going to complain about the fact that they're 5-1. Like, we can make jokes and complain about Nagy's coaching and all that, and their shitty offense, but they are still 5-1. It's better than them being like the 2-4 that they could be, easily could be. They have gotten pretty lucky, but I'll take 5-1 or, like I said, over 2-4 or something like that.
At least we still have a reason to watch the season. Yeah, you know what I mean? Right. Like, so that's been good, but I almost worry that, like, the defense is going to set up to be blamed, like, one day. Like, there'll be a time when the defense does allow a touchdown, you know, late in the game, and it's going to be like, well, maybe the defense isn't that elite. But the thing with the Bears is they just have such a small margin for error because the offense is among the worst offenses in the league. So the defense has to play perfect, and they can play perfect for, you know, a stretch of 5-6 games in a row against lesser competition. But eventually, like, I don't think this defense is at the level of the 2006 team that took the Bears to the Super Bowl. I don't know what your thoughts on that are. I don't think they're as good as they were 2 years ago.
And even that defense gave up that late touchdown to Nick Foles. Like, they took the lead. Mitch actually had that nice drive, I think, and they took the lead in the fourth quarter, and they needed one big stop, and Nick Foles drove the Eagles down the field to score a touchdown against that elite defense, which was one of the like best, I think it was the best defense in the league that season. So, like, yeah, margin for error is definitely very small, and like, there are just times where you have a breakdown and then they lose it, and it sucks.
Point is, Bears, we got no faith in you. Prove us wrong, Bears. And they're doing it so far, right? Like, yeah. Who would have thought this team would be 5-1? Yeah. But
back the wins. It's really all they can do at this point. Like, we'd love to see them be prettier. We'd love to see the offense score more points. We'd love to see Nagy not have his head up his ass half the time. But they're 5-1. Like I said, we'll see. Like, these next couple weeks, we'll really get a good gauge on how good they actually are. Like I said, if they can give me one win and at least stay competitive and not like get totally pantsed in these games, like, I think I'd probably be happy with that. And then
do they beat the Rams? Give me a prediction.
I would guess no. I think it'll probably be very similar to these last two games they played against the Rams, just completely ugly, low scoring. Like we saw yesterday, Jared Goff in some of these big games. We saw it in the Super Bowl. We've seen it against the Bears in a couple of years where he just completely sucks. Like he's really interesting because he has games where like he looks unbelievable and that offense looks unbelievable. And then like yesterday, bad. These couple games against the Bears the last couple of years, the game 2 years ago where the Bears won 15-6, I mean, they just completely rocked him. They completely owned him. And even the game last year, I think it was last year, the Bears lost like 17-7 because the offense was terrible, but they shut down the Rams offense. So I would expect to see probably another low scoring affair like that, but I would guess the Bears lose, but I mean, they certainly, I think they could win. I just don't have that much faith in Jared Goff to like tear the Bears defense up.
Yeah. It's going to have to be an ugly game for the Bears to win. Right. And the Bears have had success with the Rams in the past. So
I certainly worry about Aaron Donald just mauling, especially with no James Daniels in the middle and the offensive line. I mean, the Bears offensive line is not, they have not run blocked well. I worry about Aaron Donald just destroying the middle of that offensive line. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but I don't have my hopes up.
We'll see, man. Go Bears.
Yeah, we'll see. Go Bears. Go Bears. All right, that is all for us this week here at Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Go check out all the other great pods across our network. We got NFL pods. We got all the other NBA pods. Obviously, with the draft coming up, there'll be plenty of great NBA draft talk across the network. Shout out to our sponsors, Indeed and Bet Online. And for us, obviously, you know where to find us on Twitter. Rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Let us know how we're doing. If you have any ideas, if you have any questions, we will be happy to answer them on future podcasts. So for Jason and Ricky, this has been Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. Talk to you guys next time.